A preacher decided to start his Sunday morning Bible class in a way that would catch the attention of his audience. And he said, "Everyone in this church is going to die." And you notice that there was a guy in the audience who was smiling very broadly at this statement. And so he asked him, "What are you so amused about?" And the man said, "This is not my church. I'm just visiting my sister for the weekend." The writer of Ecclesiastes tells us that there is a time to give birth and a time to die. For all of us here today, there's only two possibilities. We'll either be here when Jesus returns, or we will die, even visitors. And as Ecclesiastes 12:7 says, "Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." I read about a professor who was visiting a third world country, and he was talking with one of the local doctors, and he asked him, "So what's the death rate around here?" And the doctor replied, "Same as any place, one death per person." So I hate to break it to you, but we're all terminal. And I think Bugs Bunny was quoting Elbert Hubbard when he said, "Don't take life too seriously, you'll never get out of it alive." Well, the second half is certainly true. See, statistics show that 10 out of 10 will die. With all of our medical knowledge and all of our skill, we cannot stop death. And you might die of old age, or you might get a certain disease where you got so much time to get your house in order, but then again, you might end up in a natural disaster or be hit by a drunk driver or a stray bullet. Maybe you're given the wrong prescription. You have a fatal heart attack, or you simply take a ride on a duck boat. You see, it happens all the time. The cemeteries are filled with the old and the young. People die regardless of their age, regardless of how much money they have, and regardless of how powerful or how famous that they may be. In the words of James, "You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away." 2018 might be it for you or me. I'm not being morose and macabre, I'm being sober and sensible. See, our time is a precious commodity that will one day run out. And death is not easy to face. I certainly don't like the idea of death. As you know, many people become bitter when having to face either their own death or the death of a loved one. And many people will even leave God and His church because of the untimely death of a loved one. And then there's the fear factor. See, we're always afraid of the unknown. And God puts something in all of us that wants to live. And sometimes there's discomfort or even great pain in death. Nobody wants that. Bildad, one of Job's friends, he described death as the king of terrors in Job 18:14. And so this morning, as we continue our series, Becoming Like Jesus in the 21st Century, I just decided to name the series. It's better late than never, I guess. But that's what we've been doing, see? I want us to look at how Jesus dealt with facing death. Since Jesus and death certainly crossed paths, we find that Jesus spoke about death, Jesus was confronted with the death of others, and Jesus had to face his own death. So number one, for those of you who are filling in the bulletin inserts, Jesus spoke about death. And some of the things that he said may be coming to your mind. Jesus told the parable of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke 16 and what happened after they both died. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they record that he was confronted by the Sadducees and he gave evidence from the scriptures of life after death. He talked about the resurrection at the end of time in John chapter 5 and how he's going to be involved in that. In John 11, he said that he is the resurrection and the life. We find teachings like the one in Luke 12:4-5. Now, this is before Jesus' parable of the rich fool. "And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do, but I will warn you whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he has killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him." And we find him talking about the judgment day in Matthew 25. that day when he will either say, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, or depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. And then, of course, all of his parables on being prepared, on being ready for that. It's one thing to not be ready for a math test or a DMV test. It's quite another to not be ready for the judgment day. And we find him telling the criminal on the cross next to him, truly I say to you, today you shall be with me in paradise. Luke 23:43. So what do we learn from all these teachings from Jesus? One thing is that he certainly didn't look at death the same way as a lot of people do. He had a very different perspective from much of the world. Because it seems that a lot of people, they're trying to hang on to this life for dear life. But Jesus taught us that death is not necessarily a negative, but a positive. You see, it ushers us into the realm of God. And many people teach that, well, you only live once, and so you got to get all the gusto you can. Eat, drink, and be merry, etc. They sometimes use the acronym YOLO. But Jesus taught that there is life after death, and the way you live your life in this realm will determine where you end up in eternity. Will that be a day of rejoicing and the best day of our existence, or the worst? The judgment day is a coming reality. Will you and I be ready? So I believe the way that you view death will determine how you approach life. And simply thinking about death and thinking about the judgment can definitely help us to put everything into perspective. In Ecclesiastes 7:2, it says, it is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. There's something really good that happens at a memorial or at a funeral or a graveside service, and that is a reminder of our mortality. See, it won't be too long before everyone is gathered together again, and it's me in the coffin. See, we're given a reminder of the brevity of life, and the brevity of life teaches us a lesson in the futility of just living for this world. All right, number two, Jesus was confronted with the death of others. Well, first of all, we find that he would sometimes say that a dead person was asleep. And we see that with a synagogue official's daughter in Luke 8 and then Lazarus, of course, in John 11. Now, that was before he raised them from the dead. And we also see from the New Testament writers, they picked up on that as well. Luke, in Acts chapter 7, he said that of Stephen. Paul said it in 1 Thessalonians 4. So why use the term asleep? From time to time, we do find that term being used by pagans as a euphemism for death. But when Jesus, and later his disciples, when they used it, well, it took on a whole new meaning, because sleep suggests something of the temporary nature of death. You go to sleep at night, and then you wake up rejuvenated in the morning. When we die, it's not the end. And I think it's simply our bodies that sleep. See, we go to the Hadean realm, the place of disembodied spirits, and we wait for the judgment day. We wait for the resurrection and judgment day. And of course, we get that from the parable of the rich man and Lazarus and a few other places. Now, another thing is that Jesus expressed emotion when confronted with the death of others. And we can see that in Matthew chapter 14 with the death of John the Baptist. And then when Jesus heard it, he withdrew from there in a boat to a lonely place by himself. In Luke chapter 7, you find that widow of Nain, whose only son had died. Luke 7:13, it says, and when the Lord saw her, he felt compassion for her and said to her, do not weep. And if you would, let's turn over now to John 11. I'd like for us to read verses 32 through 38 with the death of Lazarus. Notice how John records the emotions of Jesus here, all throughout. John 11, 32 through 38. Therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled, and said, where have you laid him? They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. And so the Jews were saying, "Behold how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not this man who opened the eyes of him who was blind have kept this man also from dying?" Jesus, therefore, again, being deeply moved within, came to the tomb. Now with the widow of Nain's son, okay, he raised Lazarus to life. But we can see that death and the emotions that it produced in other people, it affected him. Does Jesus care when our loved ones die? Yeah, I think he does. And of course, Romans 12:15, we are told to weep with those who weep. Well, number three, Jesus had to face his own death. Jesus came to die on the cross, and there was a specific time for that to happen. See, John in his gospel would often use the phrase, "his time had not yet come." Now, we don't know a specific time for our death, although sometimes we're given an idea, like 6 months to live with a certain cancer or other disease. But like Jesus, we do know that we are going to die. So how did Jesus deal with it? Well, as the time for his death was coming closer, we find that he resolutely set his face to go to Jerusalem, as Luke tells us, where he was going to die. Jesus knew what he had to do, and the fear of death wasn't going to stop him from doing it. How difficult would it have been to go to Jerusalem a week before like that? See, Jesus didn't have to die on that occasion. He could have easily skirted it. And so we can see the element of courage. Now, let's turn to Mark chapter 10, verses 32 through 34. Another thing is that we see the gradual unfolding of information that's given to the 12 to prepare them for what was coming. Mark chapter 10, verses 32 through 34. And they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking on ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. And again, he took the 12 aside and began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes. And they will condemn him to death and will deliver him to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit upon him and scourge him and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise again." Jesus was very thoughtful, very mindful of them. And we can see his concern for those he's leaving behind, especially with his teaching in the upper room, John 14 through 16. Well, I think that we should try to do the same. And we can also see his other preparation work, getting his house in order, if you will. He didn't hold grudges. He forgave those who had wronged him. Unlike King David, who gave Solomon his hit list at the end of his life. And we can see from Luke chapter 22 that he let Peter know that he forgave him even before Peter denied him those three times. On the cross, he asked the Father to forgive those who were crucifying him. Luke 23. And we can see that he spent his last day with his closest friends and in prayer to the Father. And then he gave salvation to the thief on the cross, Luke 23, and he made sure that his mother was going to be taken care of after he, you know, to be taken care of in her old age, John 19. We don't know when we're going to die. So I suggest we need to get our house in order now. Get my life right with God. Mend a damaged friendship. Repay a debt. Send an overdue letter. Lay aside a grievance. Act on a noble impulse. Whatever it may be, we need to make sure that we're right with God and with man. Is there something you need to do to be right with God? Is there someone you need to forgive or to ask forgiveness? Is there someone you need to tell the gospel? Is there something that you need to do to make sure those you leave behind are going to be taken care of? You know, life insurance, a will, and maybe a letter to your loved ones in case of your untimely death and so forth. Jesus covered all his bases, and so should we. Now, something else along this line. Besides coming to be the sacrifice for sin, Jesus came to be our model. to show us what God designed us to be, to show us how to live in this world. And so I think that we need to consider what kind of legacy we're going to leave. You see, it's not just the tangible stuff that we leave behind, like money and possessions. It's also our values and our ideals. See, our legacy is something that we're creating every day through our words and our actions and our attitudes and our decisions. The group Mumford & Sons, they have a song called Winter Winds. It's got a really good verse. We'll be washed and buried one day, my girl, and the time we were given will be left for the world. The flesh that lived and loved will be eaten by plague. So let the memories be good for those who stay. I grew up seeing a cross stitch on my grandmother's wall that my mother made for her. It was an old saying believed to be by Stephen Grillet. He was a French Quaker in the 19th century. It goes like this: I shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, or any kindness that I can show to any human being, let me do it now. Let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. It's a very interesting passage in 2 Chronicles 21:20. It says, Jehoram was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years. He passed away to no one's regret, and was buried in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the kings. Isn't that sad? I heard about a crotchety old woman who died, and the family, they gathered to plan the funeral, and the funeral director passed around a paper, and he asked, what did they want left in the coffin? You know, meaning jewelry, a Bible, some token, etc. One of the teenage grandchildren, he wrote in regards to this question, Grandma. That's what he wanted left in the coffin. You can end up like Jehoram, to no one's regret, or you can end up like Tabitha in Acts chapter 9, whose death made everyone sad because her life was said to be abounding with deeds of kindness and charity. What will people remember about you? What are they going to want to put on your tombstone? Here lies Ty, he loved bacon. Is that it? Why not give them something more? Back to Jesus. Let's turn now to Luke chapter 22. I want us to take a look at him in the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is before they came with Judas and he was arrested. Luke 22, 39 through 44. And he came out and proceeded, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples also followed him. And when he arrived at the place, he said to them, pray that you may not enter into temptation. He withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and began to pray, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. Now an angel from heaven appeared to him, strengthening him. And being in agony, he was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. So we can see that facing death, it's not easy, not even for Jesus. Jesus died young and innocent, and it came with great pain and agony. He didn't want to do it, but he was not bitter. Your will be done. Why not? Well, I believe that there are two keys. First, because Jesus knew what was coming after. John chapter 17, he prayed, I glorified you on the earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. Now, Father, glorify me together with yourself, with the glory which I had with you before the world was. And what do we have coming for us? That's why Paul could say to live as Christ and to die as gain. Philippians 1:21. And we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. 2 Corinthians 5:8. The early Christians tell us that Paul was beheaded. And I can just see him running up and jumping on the beheading block and telling the executioner, would you please hurry it up? I want to get home. And sure, if there's pain involved, then we're not looking forward to it. But in relation to eternity, I think the technical term is, it's small potatoes. Now, a second thing, besides knowing what was coming after, is that Jesus was not attached to this world. Can you think of one thing that Jesus owned that he didn't want to leave behind? I think we are to be Velcro people. Now, I know some people use that term negatively, but I'm using it to mean that we're easily pulled up. As in the old saying, happy is the one who has learned to hold the things of this world with a loose hand. Remember Howard Hughes, the American aviator, one of the wealthiest people in the world? And well, he never made an official will. And so when the guy died, it caused all kinds of problems. That's actually happened quite a few times. What, did they think that they were going to take that money with them? Or did they just think that they would never die? The way you view death will determine the way you approach life, and I believe the flip side is also true. So the way you live your life will determine the way you approach death. Because if you're just hoarding as much stuff as possible, as much stuff as you can in this life, and that's what you care about, that's what you love, that's what you treasure, that's going to be pretty difficult to leave. It's going to be pretty tough to leave it. Look, there's nothing wrong with having stuff. There's nothing wrong with even having a lot of stuff. But would you shed a tear if God allowed Satan to take it all away, like he did with Job? Would that ruin your life? We came into this world naked, and that's how we're going to leave it. For we brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. 1 Timothy 6:7. And so Jesus wasn't bitter because he knew what was coming after, and he was not attached to this world. And I'm convinced we need to follow his example in this, as in everything else. We don't normally think about death very much, especially not when we're young. But I think we should. It was always on Jesus' mind. See, thinking about it can help us to keep everything in the proper perspective. Now again, our time is a precious commodity that's going to one day run out. Ephesians chapter 5, 15 and 16. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. And I'm reminded of Paul before Felix. In Acts chapter 24, as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix became frightened and said, "Go away for the present, and when I find time, I will summon you." When I find time, as has been said, first it's too young, then too busy, then too old, then too late. We're not promised tomorrow. Someday I'll get my life in order is the cradle that Satan rocks men and women off to sleep in. Satan wants us distracted. I had something happen to me the other day that reminded me of that. And, okay, as you can imagine, VBS generates a lot of crumbs. And it was after VBS was over, and I walked into the kitchen back there to get myself a cup of tea, and sure enough, there was a mouse on the floor just eating away. So I went and grabbed a broom, and I snuck up behind it. I thought, surely, it's going to see me and run away. But it was so involved in what it was doing, so excited with the yummy VBS crumbs, that whack, the broom came down, and that was the end of the mouse. Now, I know some of the animal lovers are probably cracking their knuckles. The point is, that mouse was so distracted, it didn't see me coming. Satan wants us distracted so he can get us. There are no guarantees for tomorrow. And so we need to be prepared. We need to live each day as if it were the last. You are just a vapor or mist. Make the most of your mist. And because of what Jesus said, we no longer have to be enslaved to the fear of death. Hebrews chapter 2. Verses 14 and 15, it says, "Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives." We no longer have to live our lives with the fear of death. See, as one of my old teachers used to say, for a Christian, death is just being transferred to the home office. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. When people look at you and me, do they see Jesus? It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.